Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles transform the way they work. After closing their New York City showroom, they started doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, people from all over the world can come into their showroom. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
What's up, my peeps? It is that time of the week, the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. And I want to tell you, this week, I just want to go and review it all. 2020, football season, crazy season. The way it started and the way it ended at the Super Bowl at home for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm bringing on my partner, Rich Eisen. Rich Eisen has a study in the articulation of the human journey, and we will have him articulate this journey in 2020. We will talk all that went on all year, and we will talk about what's still going on right now. Rich Eisen joins the MIP. Folks, I'm happy to bring you this guy here. He is a great friend of mine. I worked with him for a long time. Worked with him at ESPN before we moved over to the NFL Network. This man was born in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Staten Island.
Correct.
He graduated from the U of M, University of Michigan. That's the blue know it, not that you know it, that he graduated from. But the man has been insane in his journey, in his career in broadcasting, man. He's been at ESPN. So a great, great show on SportsCenter, working with the legend Stu Scott. Started the NFL Network. Is the main man, I call him, for the NFL Network. Started with Total Access, and now he runs our show, the big show, Game Day Morning. He runs everything. That's what he does, because he keeps us all in line, and we all call him our quarterback. It is my host, Rich Eisen. Rich, I'm so happy to have you on the MIP, Rich, and I saved this thing because I knew that in the end of the season, when it's all said and done, I needed the perfect person to recap that whole season, to recap what we just went through in 2020, and it was an incredible season that ended with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning a Super Bowl, Rich. Yes. Let's jump right into this, Rich. Who was your preseason pick to win the Super Bowl?
Well, it was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I backed off them not once but twice. And then you sailed in, to use a Buccaneer term, right at the end of the season and went on NFL Game Day Final and acted like you were on the pirate ship all 26 weeks, not throwing Brady under the bus after a week one performance in New Orleans where he threw a pick six and then another one, another interception that Mike Evans was intended for, one of your guys, didn't at all mention that you didn't think Brady's arm strength was there. And then 5 weeks later, it's as if you didn't go on the Thursday Night Football post-game show and talk about Brady as an elderly senior citizen who forgot the number of downs. You didn't doubt at all. That's the way you acted on the Game Day Final. But you're a professional, Michael. You know how to work it. You know how to make it sound like you were on board the entire time. And it infuriated me. I'm not going to lie. It infuriated the entire NFL Game Day Morning crew, on air, off air. But you just be you, Michael. That's the only way you know how to do it. Hey, and that's fine. That's fine.
Pete Carroll says, and this part I like, I love this part about the Seahawks. You can't win a game in the first quarter. Can we win a game in the second quarter? No. Can we win it in the third quarter? No. But can we win in the fourth quarter? Yes. And that's when I came through, in that fourth quarter, Richard. Yes. It really was. And I thought that was an incredible game, because we had talked about it all. I mean, atmosphere of the Super Bowl, Rich, universe. I didn't think you would ever come off Tampa because of the Michigan connection. the big blue connection.
You know? Well, look, Irv, you know, game day morning producers give us two shots at a mulligan. They give us two shots. One is at Thanksgiving.
Right.
And Thanksgiving week 13, or what was that, week 12? I think that's what it was, week 12. And the Chiefs were about to stroll into Tampa, and we all know what they did to Tampa in that week 12 game. Absolutely torched them with Tyreek Hill, 200 yards receiving in the first quarter, so on and so forth. And so here I am on Thursday sensing that the Chiefs were about to send the Bucs to a 7-5 record. And I was spot on about that. And I thought to myself, well, who's playing better right now in the NFC? And I hopped on the Saints, who had just, as you know, eviscerated the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just a couple weeks before that on Sunday
Night Football. Week 9.
Correct. So I did that. That's what my mindset was there. And I also hopped off of the Ravens, who was my preseason pick right there, to jump on the Chiefs on that spot. So I kind of got it half right there. And then when it was the postseason, another shot at an opportunity to mulligan. My son, Coop, you know, who is your de facto nephew, your first, he was Uncle Michael. And he comes in to my office and we're on the Zoom, the game day morning Zoom. And it was time to choose either again or stay put. Again, you know, not to go all Ted Cruz here and blame it on my child, but he did say, you know, Dad, what do you think about Bills and Packers? And I'm like, you know what? That's not a bad choice right there, because Aaron Rodgers is the one seed and the Bills were playing outstanding football. And the Chiefs, as you know, were not blowing people out. And that was the whole concept. So, you know, put it all together. And I actually think that, you know, I wish I had actually stayed put with what I had. And unfortunately, I could not get it right. And you're bringing it up, which is fine. It's your decision. It's your pod. You're in charge. I'm just, you know, I'm the host who's trying to, you know, not be the control freak that I am to try and take control of a conversation. But it's your show. It's your pod. And I'm pleased to be a guest in it, even though you are that's pointing things out.
Point right there you just brought up. And I want to ask you about that after we get through the Super Bowl experience, because yes, you're right. I never thought about that till you just said that. And here's my inquisitive brain, like, because I want to break that down. Like, what is it like? You're used to hosting everything, yes, when you come, but you come on as guest all the time. And how much, I'll get to that. How much of that did you say, give me that right microphone, I want to take over? That's interesting. I'll get to that. But let's talk about the Super Bowl experience outside, yes, of the picks, outside of the picks. And you guys were right. It was week one, and I thought about this, which is interesting. The Saints beat Tampa in week one and in week 9, and they played a third time in week 19. And I'm like, wait a minute, week 1, week 9, they wasn't ready. But week 19, when you put it together, they'll be – that's why I took Tampa, right, even in week 19. But I thought that was interesting, just how that all played out. Rich, what, on the Super Bowl experience, you've been to – how many Super Bowls have you attended?
Well, the first one I ever went to was as a fan when I was working on ESPN. It was the Super Bowl, I think it was a 35, Ravens destroying the Giants in the same stadium that we just broadcast from, as a matter of fact. It was the first one at Raymond James. And then I've been covering every Super Bowl for NFL Network since. So it was so long ago, Michael, that it was just Brady's second, just merely his second Super Bowl, when he was taking on Jake Delhomme and Mohsin Mohammed and John Fox and the Carolina Panthers. That was NFL Network's first. We were 11 weeks old when we showed up in Houston. So again, like I said, it was so long ago. It was just the second of 10 Super Bowls for Brady and just the first of two that he won in that city, in that stadium. So that's how long ago it was.
That's amazing that we explained that you could use that. It was just a second at the time.
I know.
It's a second.
He's been a 10. It's
he's
a stupid
been
number,
more
Michael.
After that one.
It's a stupid number. It's a stupid number that will never be touched. And, you know, and you kind of hit on it, you know, in our pregame show, and I should have sensed it, but I still thought that Mahomes and the Chiefs and Kelce and Tyreek Hill would come loaded for bear, and they ran into a buzzsaw. The defense is phenomenal. That Devin White kid is a beast.
He's a beast.
I know you use the name Ray Lewis. You threw a couple names out there in our pregame show to refer to his right lion-heartedness, and he's amazing. And I think, though, also you hit on The fact that Brady wasn't going to let Mahomes get anywhere near a launching pad that could potentially be in his area code by the end of Mahomes's career. And also the fact that it was home field advantage, not because of the crowd noise, and not because, you know, the Chiefs were in town all week staying in somebody's, you know, staying in a hotel. It wasn't that. And that kind of threw me and the rest of the crew off. That was the banana in the tailpipe that we took. You got the sense of the players basically saying, we are not going to have our home field ruined for the rest of our career, where we stroll out on the field and recall that's the spot where Mahomes threw one to Hill, and that's the spot where they set up the podium to celebrate on our turf. I did not see that one coming. You did, and it definitely played out. There's no question about that. That was part of Super Bowl 55.
Yeah, after the game, that's exactly what those guys were saying. You know, I was like, it's when I was texting Kirk, you know, somebody on Twitter said, man, Michael doing one got it right. Kirk got to answer him back. Listen, Michael just guessed it like all of the rest of us.
Kirk doesn't like that being
I said, no. Kirk, watch. I said, watch the pregame speech. They'll be saying a lot of this stuff. Watch the postgame. They'll say a lot of the stuff that I was talking about not winning this, not playing it at my house. You know, and so the game I thought was an incredible game, Rich. But the experience around the game is what I want to ask you about. You've seen all the experience. Right. This was a COVID year. A strange year in the least, if we say that. But call that the COVID Super Bowl. The COVID Super Bowl experience, how did that differ from all the other experiences that you had?
Well, I mean, obviously, everything was totally different. It was eerie for me when I stepped in the stadium with you guys on Sunday morning and saw 30,000 cardboard cutouts. I mean, that was, you know, something I never want to see again. And it was just terrible. But the fact is that we did make it to Super Sunday with no games being canceled throughout the season, with a positivity rate of 0.08, Michael. And that is an amazing, amazing number. And I never thought that, you know, the NFL 100 season would be topped in terms of a cause for the NFL to sit back and, you know, look back at to what they did and marvel that NFL 101 was something that nobody saw coming. And the fact that it was pulled off with such success in that regard is nothing short of amazing, nothing short of amazing. And is something that I hope we never see again, though, you know, so it really is something that I'll never forget, but hope never repeat.
Yeah. And Rich, when I go through last season, I think so much about the whole journey. You know, you and I always talk about the journey and things. And I think about, wow, we started this thing off right under the midst of all that social justice and social injustice, coming off the George Floyd stuff, which was, you know, which was hard, that going through that emotionally as a country. I mean, having guys like you, who I've known forever. I know the core of who you are, and you reach out and say, man, listen, I love you. Is there anything I can do? I feel like I can't. I'll get emotional even talking about it, because I felt bad, because I was like, Rich, you don't have to listen. You're great. You know what I mean? You're exactly what we need more of, but you felt that you needed to reach out. Why was that? Why did you feel you needed?
Oh, God. Well, you know my wife longer than you know me. You were at my wedding. You spoke at my daughter's baby naming. I mean, and the fact that you as a person of color might be going through some sort of questioning about your existence and your meaning and your place in this country because of actions that are being taken by people with the same color of my skin. I couldn't take that for a split second. And, you know, Susie and I talked about it, and we're like, we got to reach out to our friends of color and let them know we stand with them, that we love them. And we don't view them. I don't view you as a black person. I view you as one of my best friends, who I reach out to in moments of my personal joy because I want to share it with you and because you enhance it. Your speech at my daughter's baby naming is still something that is epic today. Oh. Talking about what you spoke about the importance of family and and being there for your family and being a father in the world and the importance of that. And I see, you know, when I was with you on Thursday Night Football pre-pandemic and number of times you would leap off the set when we're just about a minute to go before going on the air and you're not in your chair because you're taking a photograph with a father. Because you would stop and you'd leap off the set with dads and fathers and sons because it was important for you to foster that and be there. And I saw that. And so that you might for a split second on this planet be questioning your place in the world. No, I had to call up and say something. And, you know, I didn't think you'd be bringing that up here, but now that you have, it's the truth. It's a fact. And that's why I did that.
Yeah, know? Rich. And I bring it up because there'll be other people like you, great people, that when we go through things like that, and I always say that's the pain of it. There's a shame in a pain of it. As African-Americans, we talk about the pain of it. But there's a shame of it for people that have been like you. You know, the footprints are in the sand, the type of people these are, and the type of people you've been and the type of person you are, to have people look at you with that other look that they look at others that have come short when it comes to being that kind of an American, that bothered me. You know what I mean? And it made me think about it. And after you called me, I called some of my friends and said, hey, man, you know what I'm saying? Listen, I'm talking about some of my Caucasian friends and said, listen, man, I appreciate the kind of friend you've been. And when I see things like this, it makes me appreciate it even more. I just wanted you to know that because I thought about it on the reverse after your phone call. And that's why I brought it up. I brought it up, Rich, because I think it says a great deal about who you are. You know what I mean? About the person, about the people. And when we're working, I want people to know, we really do. I mean, we really do love each other. We really do have a great time together, no matter where we are and what we're doing with the wives. We have a great time together, man. We're blessed in that sense to be living our lives together.
No doubt. I mean, we are family. We text each other. We love, you know, we're equal opportunity under the bus throwers, you know.
Yeah. We get everybody.
You know, it took some time to get there. There were times when I was rubbed the wrong way and Marshall Falk would take me aside and go, hey, look, you know, you throw people under the bus, you know, you got to take this a little better. Like I remember Marshall would do that a couple times, you know, it is a gift. It is a gift to do a show that we love doing and do it with people that we love because it's a grind, man. I mean, we see each other 26 straight weeks and I got to tell you, we haven't done the show in 3 weeks and I miss you. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like I miss you. I miss the guys. I miss Kurt bitching and moaning about getting things wrong or being called out about that sort of things. And I miss Mooch dressing up like a pirate. I miss all of that stuff. And I think people enjoy watching us have a good time and that, you know, we don't put on any airs. Like we may look a little foolish just if you just flip on the television set and say, why is Michael Irvin cawing like a raven, you know, or why is Rich dressed up like a pirate? You know, we have fun and I think people enjoy doing that. But when it comes down to it, we have serious football discussions because that's at the bottom of it. And I think that's why our show works. I believe we are the best on TV and no one can ever shake me of that belief. It's a fact.
More so, I believe this year than ever. All of that, the fun stuff, more so this year than ever. Because we're like what we're talking about, we're coming off of COVID and everybody's trying to look for a way to get out. At the end of the year, that's what I saw people text us after our last show. Like, thank you. Thank you for doing the things that you did to help us get through, Rich. And I mean, that stuff means something to me. You know, we're waking up, we're in people's homes and everything early in the morning. So that means something, Rich. Rich, I want to go back and talk about some of that some of the things that are going on around the league right now also, you know, when you see these quarterbacks.
Yep.
I mean, pulling the power punches that they're pulling, moving around. It seems like you never would even think about having primetime quarterbacks become available. And now it looks like there could be a highway of very good quarterbacks coming. What do you see, or what do you think about what you're seeing now with all the quarterbacks, the trades, and we'll break down those. We'll talk those trades. But what's happening in the league, period, with these quarterbacks?
Well, I think there's no question there's a singular effect. I think there's one through line of every last one that we could mention. Every last situation, whether it's a team that no longer thinks that just because they were attached at the hip contractually or draft-wise with a younger quarterback, or they're attached at the hip with a long-time quarterback, like, say, Big Ben in Pittsburgh, that there are other quarterbacks out there like Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson on two different levels in terms of playing career, in terms of age, just in terms of Aaron Rodgers, you could throw into this mix as well, that you've got a bunch of quarterbacks questioning their long-term plans, even though you think that they're never going to move or want to be moved. And there's a two-word through line to all of it. And those two words are Tom Brady. This is the Tom Brady effect, Michael Irvin. The fact that Tom, after 20 years, said, you know what? There is another way. If he could do it, anybody could do it. Anybody, whether it's a long time just sitting there, I've done it a certain way and I've paid my dues and I've done a certain way, I'm going to try it my own way. Let me see how that works. Then he wins a Super Bowl. Or it's somebody like Aaron Rodgers. I just lost Tom Brady in front of my face in my house for the first time that I got to play this National Football Conference championship game in my house. And I just lost to Tom Brady. So their team decided to go all in for Tom, and it was just his first year there. What about my team that I've been with for 10 plus years? What did they do for me? Well, I know all year long, we won 13 games just like the year before, and we wound up both years going to this game and showing up and losing it. What did my team do? And I know I was able to make us back here, but guess what they did? Not what they did for Tom Brady. Russell Wilson sitting there. All these years I've been with Pete Carroll. You know what? Maybe there's another way. Deshaun Watson, who the hell knows what's going on there in Houston? And then Pittsburgh. I know we had Big Ben and everybody else has been going just one more year with their guy. And I know, you know, didn't really work out in New Orleans with Breeze. And, you know, our guy's not going to practice every day and he's still going to cost us a fortune. And maybe we just go out and start fresh and get a new guy, just like, say, the Rams just did out of the blue, or just say what the Colts just did. You know, I mean, so on and so forth. It's all up in the air because look what Tom Brady did, Michael Irvin, after 20 years on the job. Goes somewhere else and wins it all. Look what the Bucs just did. They could have said, you know what, we're still just going to try and work it out with Jameis. I think he's got the ability, no risk it, no biscuit. This could be the guy that can actually be turned around by Bruce Arians. Yeah, you know what? Let's go for Tom Brady. Let's shoot the moon. Guess what happens? Boom. Not only a Super Bowl, but the first Super Bowl ever in which every point is scored by a guy who wasn't on the team the year before. First time ever. You see all these free agent signings just turn a team from 500 into Super Bowl champions. That's why I think every chess piece is up in the air right now, Michael, because what Tom Brady did, and I think everybody has seen that, there are no more sacred cows. That's my two cents on it.
Yeah, and I think, Rich, you hit the nail on the head on a backdrop with where Aaron Rodgers was like, wait a minute. Ultimately, I've done all of that, and you went and drafted another quarterback. You went and drafted another quarterback. And this is what I think, even like guys like Deshaun Watson, like, wait, I keep telling people, do you know the GM for Dan Marino? No, but every time you hear Dan Marino, he didn't win a Super Bowl. The GM gets the escape. He gets to escape that. We put all that on the quarterback. So right. These quarterbacks are saying, wait a minute, stop giving me these GMs that don't know what they're doing and making me deal with it. And ultimately, I'm going to be remembered for not having this done and not the GM. I don't know the GM's name. I do know the quarterback's name because right. That's what we talk about every day. And I think those quarterbacks are saying no more of this. I want to take control of my
future. Yeah, and so if Russ is like, you know what, you've just hired another offensive coordinator who's the passing coordinator who's never done this before from the Rams. I mean, this could be a narrative that I'm planting with no sense of it, but he might be sitting there saying, okay, I'll give this guy a whirl and we'll make it work. Or I don't know. Why didn't they reach out to me if this is the guy I need to attach my wagon to here? He needs to win another one to be on a certain level, a certain plan. Again, it's just the Brady effect. Brady's got seven of them now. Who's going to even come to half as much as
right.
that?
So the bar, you know what I mean? Remember, the bar used to be you got to at least win one. Now
you got to get on this now.
Right. You got to win more than one. When Montana and them had it at four, you got one, you're 25%. So you get one, you get 25%, you're in there. Now it's at seven. One ain't 25% no more. You gotta go and get to two of them just to say we're in the talk.
I'm telling you, this is the Brady effect, and so many that's different levels. When you're saying, why are all these quarterbacks either rumored to be available or wanting to go somewhere else or made completely available? I mean, look at the Pittsburgh Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert, when asked last week about Ben Roethlisberger's future, the only thing he would admit is Ben Roethlisberger is a human being on the planet who happens to have a contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers, yeah. And that's it. And then you're hearing, you know, teams are still calling for Russell Wilson and teams are still calling for Deshaun Watson. And then you got all these young kids that are coming up. Who knows what the Eagles are going to do? Is it Jalen Hurts? Are they going to draft somebody else? You know, Wentz is gone. It's just like you draft somebody in top one or two and you now sign him to a nine-figure deal. That's two quarterbacks under such circumstances from the same draft. Adios to you is your phrase. And then you got Marcus Mariota, who's a backup, and Jameis Winston, who's a backup. And so basically there are no more sacred cows left, with the exception of TB12, who's done it for somebody else. And if you think he can't do it again next year, I'm by the way, I already announced on my show, I'm out of the predicting business. I'll do it every week, obviously, for us, but it's Brady and I'm sticking to it. I don't care if the guy's like 2-10. I'm sticking with him on Thanksgiving, just to bring this all, I guess, full circle. That's it. I'm done doubting. Finished. Over. Done.
This year for Brady was just it was just an incredible year. It really was, Rich. It was just an insane year to see him accomplish what he accomplished, and I enjoyed, honestly, seeing him fight through the struggles early on. It didn't just come and click. Come together.
Well, you enjoyed it, you know, at the end of the journey, because you think it helped build the journey to you being correct. At the time, if you use the word enjoy, I think you were enjoying it in a certain way of Brady struggling. You kind of enjoyed that. You kind of got your jollies out of Brady being the man
that we've never seen him do. Brady did a repass. He caught his own pass. He tried to rethrow the ball. Like, wait a minute. He had up four fingers on a fifth down.
I know. I hear you.
But that was the struggle that, just coming here is not just – it's not that I came. I got to put in the work. That's the word. You still have to put in the work. And he did that. He put in the work. Everybody was saying, oh, holy moly, no way they're going anywhere.
It seems like you keep trying to cover your tracks. That's what this is right now.
You are covering your
tracks, because those tracks in week one and week five were like, can you believe this is the so-called GOAT? Now you're like, it was just building to some greatness. You know what? I mean, like, the scent's still there. I'm still the bloodhound following your scent. And I am staying on the track.
I question when we said GOAT. I said, is it the acronym or small GOAT? Like the GOAT.
That's still true. You're owning it. You're owning it. That's true.
Right. I did question. After that repass, I had every right to question it. Mm-hmm. I had every right to question it. Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles reinvent the way they work. When the pandemic hit, the bike shop had to close their New York City showroom. They found a way to reopen by doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, the team can meet with two or three times the number of customers than they could before. And people from all over the world can visit their showroom, learn more about their story and others at Microsoft.com/Teams. After that repass, let's break down those trades, though, man. You talked about that first trade, Matthew Stafford to the Rams, and then your boy Jared Goff going over to Detroit, man. What did you see in that trade? What were your thoughts on that trade?
Well, clearly, you know, Goff and the Rams were on the outs. I mean, that was all the word you were hearing towards the end of the season. The minute that I heard that John Walford, you know, the AAF. Arizona hotshot that got the start in Seattle, that as soon as I, for the playoff game,
they wanted to play.
As soon as I heard, you know, he left and the playoff start in Green Bay for the divisional playoff round, for the first couple of days, hearing that, you know, that McVay wasn't committing. And I'm like thinking to myself, well, that's pretty damn weird, you know, that Goff didn't get the start in Seattle because obviously he had thumb surgery and they decided that Walford had the snaps or whatever you want to do. Now, you know, Goff had just won a playoff game. And I know he didn't do very much, but he still won that playoff game, even though that goes to Walford's credit. I knew something was up. And then the dreaded words that you hear from a general manager that you know is trouble for the court, for the player in question, is when Les Snead, the general manager of the Rams, did use the two dreaded words, which is "for now." When he's like, you know, Jared Goff's our quarterback for now. And as I said on my show, you know, just ask, you know, of Chris Brockman, my colleague, former Game Day Morning producer, he's sitting across the way from me. I said, Chris, just to give an example as to how "for now" is the two dreaded words and how it changes the entirety of a sentence. I'm like, just ask me, you know, who I'm married to. And he goes, okay, Rich, who are you married to? Well, I'm married to Susie Schuster and I love her very much. And she's my wife. And then I'm like, go ahead now, ask me the other question. He goes, who are you married to, Rich? I'm like, well, I'm married to Susie Schuster. I love her so much. She's my wife for now. See how those two words change things?
Everything.
I mean, it means everything, those two words, everything. For now. So when I heard the "for now" for Jared Goff, I'm like, well, that's the end of that. Like, there's no way to come back for now. Like, you can't come back from the "for now." You just can't. And sure enough, see you. And I think Stafford's a great move, man. And I know people like to slag on him, making only one playoff game that he, with all due respect to your Cowboys, should have won with a penalty that got picked up late in that game that would have changed the tenor, I believe, of that day.
Pass interference.
Uh-huh. But we'll leave it at that. I think he's got all the skill set that I think the Rams are going to utilize. And here's the one number that jumped out at me, Irv, that in the, I guess, 160-some-odd career starts that he's had, Stafford's had a 100-yard rusher 11 times. That's it. You could make the case that next season he might have half as many games with the Rams, the way that that kid Cam Akers was running the ball and how committed to the run and how the play action that McVay employs is so obviously predicated on the threat of the run. I think they're going to have a terrific season, and it's a smart move. Like, if you don't think Goff is the guy, and if he's your quarterback for now, get him out while you're so leveraged, if you will, with Donald and Jalen Ramsey. They're in their primes right now. You got a terrific defense. You know, as Sapp said, what did Sapp say in the Bucs days? He said to Gruden, just put 17 on the board. We got the rest.
Right. We got the rest.
That could be the Rams of 2021. Put 17 on the board, put 21 on the board, and look out, because you saw how Ramsey was erasing number one receivers week in and week out. And then Donald's a particular unicorn. And, you know, the line, if they stay healthy, and Kupp and Woods are terrific players. I love Stafford. I thought that was a very, and if you've got, you know, you're like, well, they don't have all these first round picks. Well, guess what? They still have the youngest roster in the league coming into the season. And a lot of those kids were balling out. It wasn't just Ramsey and it wasn't just Donald also. I like the move a lot.
Yeah, and I like it too. It keeps them in there. But you, when you hit that word "for now," it's so funny because you go back to the Pittsburgh GM saying "for now." I go all the way back to when the mess started with the AB and the Le'Veon Bell, and he was all saying, listen, we're backing up Ben all the way. Ben can do anything around here. Ben can say anything. Ben's always right. And now to go from all of that to "for now."
Our quarterback for now.
But in the Ben, I can take that. I didn't think I would see it in the Goff, because like you said, look it up. That in that year, it's Goff and Wentz. A few years before that, it was Winston and Mariota. 1-2 quarterbacks taken, not even with their football teams. That's pretty amazing. When you
one thing about. I've learned though, Irv, in my business, and I'll share it with you. You know, not that people care about my professional personal business, but I've been I'm on my fourth career agent. I've been in the business 25 years. It's not like I I change agents like, you know, certain organizations change coaches. But I learned the hard way with representation that if I don't believe in my representation or I'm questioning my representation's desire to pull out every possible stop for me professionally, I should fire them on the spot. I should get rid of them, pull the Band-Aid off. You know, I own my own show now and I now have, you know, employees and I, for a few, like, I learned the hard way. Like if I start questioning, instead of just trying to stick it out or figure it out, I could go, just pull the trigger. Just go ahead and do it. Trust your instinct, trust your gut. And clearly that happened with Goff and McVay, or Goff and Snead, or something happened where they're just like, you know what? Even though we're over leveraged with this contract and it's expensive and this might be dead cap here, dead cap there, there's still a way to figure it out. Still a way to figure it out. And if we don't have first round picks over the next couple of years, you know what? Guess what? So what? You know, Les Snead has found some terrific players, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, fifth. Richard Sherman was a fifth. Edelman's a seventh. Go find him. Go find him. Go to work and coach him up. That's your job. And go for it. And man, did they do that. They did that. And, you know, Goff in Detroit, I thought was a nice maneuver for them as well. You know, if Stafford didn't want to be there anymore, do you want to, if you're a new coach, new organization, want to start from total scratch with a rookie? Or do you want to say, okay, Jared Goff, you know, you want a redemption? We want you. We want you. Go for it. Kid did win 40 games over the last several years. Only Brady had more in the league. So it's not like he's just a useless and he's terrible. He's not. It's just that the current employers didn't believe in him anymore. And we're made the aggressive move because that's what they do. They're aggressive. They're aggressive.
And that's so interesting. On one side, you know, they make that move because I think they're smart in saying, listen, we got a championship defense. We can't play with this and getting somebody else that we have to bring along. Go get Matthew Stafford and let's get this done. On the other side, the number two guy in that scenario is Wentz, who went to. And first, I got to tell you this, Rich, because yeah. I don't want my Cowboy fans to slip this. This is how that thing worked out. This is what we call the football gods working it out. That pass interference that you so happily brought up that against the Detroit Lions that yes. we got away with, that yes. just that was just the refs making up for that dead catch that they missed years before that.
Well, they didn't miss it. They didn't miss it, Irv. That's called a proper interpretation of a rule that was a terrible rule on the books. Which
you
is
cannot
why they
tell any Cowboy it. Fan that was the proper call.
No, that's it was the proper call, and it was the proper call. The problem is the rule
never hit the ground anyway, Rich.
The rule was horrible. The problem was is the rule did not account for physical specimens and beasts and highly talented players like Dez Bryant, where two steps would be the span of an entire first down. So when he takes two steps and it covers 10 yards, it sure looks like he's definitely caught the ball. But the rule interpretation was because he was going to the ground, it's still the continuation of the catch. A horrible interpretation, but it is exactly what the rules said. That's why they changed it. The tuck rule sucked too. The tuck rule was stupid, but it was an actual proper call. That's why, you know, I spent years railing at it, Michael. It was terrible. I had Mike Pereira was on Total Access every week in the first few years that I hosted that show. And it was nonstop for me to keep bringing it up to him. He goes, well, actually, the tuck rule is important because it removes the gray area. I'm like, what are you talking about? It removes the gray area of deciding when somebody's throwing it or running it. And I'm like, actually, the tuck rule is the gray area. Because if you're saying this means that he still intends to throw it and thus this is incomplete, what other indication do you have of somebody who no longer intends to throw it than by tucking it? This means I'm about to run, not like this should
loose,
be incomplete.
Right.
This
when it comes loose, it's a fumble.
This
right.
This means
right.
I'm about to run.
Right. Right.
So
right.
why are we saying this is part of the throwing process? It's terrible, which is why I was eventually proven correct by that and the catch rule. So my next one on the hit list, Michael, is this stupid ass crap of reaching for the ball to the pylon and it right. runs through the end zone. And suddenly the defense that's given up 99 yards is bailed out. Because the ball rolled out of bounds inside the pylon in the end zone as opposed to the 1-inch yard line where the offense would have kept it. Don't get me started. See, this is my problem. I don't want to take over your pod. I've done that. I'm the guest. I am not the host. I need to back off. I need to back off and let you have the floor again. I'm sorry.
Hey,
the podcast is yours.
But that's great, Rich. When I was studying Rich and just going through things, getting ready for this, I saw something that they were talking about from the University of Michigan. They said, Rich, they really actually wrote this. They said, and I didn't know this. They said, you studied the articulation of the human journey. I never heard that said before. That they said, Rich Eisen studied, and they got this in all your bios, the articulation of the human journey. I thought that's exactly what Rich does. Rich brings in stuff. You bring in everywhere, thoughts and things that everybody are thinking about. You bring it to the table.
I try.
And that part I appreciate about it. I realize that's an interesting. I never heard that. But let's talk about this journey. That Carson Wentz journey. This is what I found interesting. Now, when Tom Brady went over to Tampa, Godwin took that damn shirt off so fast. And hey, you want 12? Hey, there you go. Hey, go get that. Buddy, get that. You know what I'm saying? You get anything you want. Come on in this locker room. We're going to listen to you. You're the man. Whatever you know. Carson Wentz going over to Indy. Michael Pittman saying, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
And now look at it. And then we go back to the locker room situation that you've heard. You know, Tom is one way in the locker room. Everybody loves Tom. Carson Wentz, we've had other things that have heard coming out of Philly. How do you think that'll play out, Rich? Now, he's got to go win this other locker room. And the first move was one of the guys saying, no, buddy, no way.
I'm second year player. Second year player, too.
A second year player saying, I'm not coming off this jersey, man.
Not talking. No, and that's what I said on my show today, Irv. It's like, you know, I want to sit here and say, like, hey, somebody's coming in and you've worn this jersey and this is what you've done for the organization and you feel a certain kinship and a certain identity. And somebody who's never played with you before is asking for your identity. I totally understand why he would say no. But, you know, I don't know what happened with Godwin and Brady, but Godwin gave him his 12. That's what he did. And there's no doubt about it that if Wentz was Brady, he'd have coughed it up. Like if Philip Rivers wore number 11, he'd have coughed it up. You know, if Aaron Rodgers came in, he'd have coughed it up. You know, there are, you know, I hate to say it, but it is true. And, you know, does it matter? I don't think so. But if let's just say T.Y. Hilton has 20 targets on Michael Pittman bobblehead night week 4. Okay.
It matters.
Just put a pin in it.
Right there.
Just put a pin in it. And you know, like if Michael Pittman, if T.Y. Hilton's got 20 targets. All right. But I don't know if that will really matter. But it definitely is something, isn't it? It's definitely something to talk about.
You did it again, Rich. You just opened me up to something else, Rich. Because, you know, if I got a quarterback coming over and he wanted 88, if Troy was getting drafted and he wore 88 at UCLA and all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, man, you get 88. You can get 88. Because the bottom line is you can get 88 so I can eat. Because I know if you're happy, you'll get me the ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this dude's not even worried about your quarterback not throwing the ball to you. So that's something. Yeah, that's something. And now you got to go win that locker room. And how does he win that locker room? He's not coming
over. Second year player says you don't get your number.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. It's just, not it's even saying, can I buy it from you? Can I do it? No, I'm not giving up this
number. No amount of money. I don't know, man.
I think that's going to be a journey. Now, I think Coach Frank Wright, he does a great job. And I love Frank Wright. He's just he's one of the best coaches out there. And he'll smooth it all over.
It's an expensive number. It's a big number. I think it's only really like 2 years. If it doesn't work out, it'll be a 3-2 or a 3-1. You know, the two becomes a one. If Wentz plays 75% of the snaps or 70% and they make the playoffs this coming year. It's a likelihood that it becomes a one. But if it becomes a one, then this was the right move. And I think, again, look, the offensive line in Indianapolis, the running game in Indianapolis, and the wideouts, including the aforementioned Pittman, are better than what Wentz had last year. There's no question in my mind about it. And also, if Wentz is going to have a problem with Jalen Hurts being drafted, then on the other side of things, he'll be much more buoyed by the fact that this team went and got him. So, and it's not right. just that, it's a quarterback, it's a quarterback coach relationship that he cherishes, I'm sure.
Right.
So, I think it's going to work. I really do. And I'm excited for him and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. The other side of that though, Wentz was in the NFC. He got their group to the championship to win division last year, not the year past, but 2019. Now Wentz is over there where all the young star quarterbacks are. So you know, it ain't like he has to play, just get him back to playing well. He has to get back to playing like he was playing in 2017 to even have a chance in that over in that conference. With all
and again, that's the reason why I think the Rams were smart. Go get your guy. Certainly since you're in the conference where it's definitely becoming a little bit longer in the tooth and you have to be careful because Brady at 43 is playing like he's 23. Think about it, Michael. Think about it. Tom Brady has won more championships in his 40s than he did in his 20s and 30s. That's a fact.
Yeah. 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 He's like George.
That's a fact.
He's good okay. for the
people. Honestly.
Yeah.
That's it's amazing. Stupid. It's stupid. He won 3 in his first 4 years. And then I might be wrong. He may have won as many in his 40s as he did in his 20s with the one against Seattle hovering. I think he might have been 39. You know, it's insane, Michael.
Yeah,
you'll never see it again.
And speaking of never see it again, I keep saying to people that it's unfair that we place this on the young man, Patrick Mahomes, because if Patrick Mahomes win 3 or 4, Rich, do we say he had a fulfilled career or do we say he fell short because we compared him so much to Brady?
Yeah, I think we're done comparing him to Brady. I mean, it's going to be interesting because, again, you and I grew up in a time where 4 was the threshold. Right. Now it's an entire generation where 7 is the threshold. And maybe we're seeing a little bit already with that kid who called Cam at his camp a free agent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, honestly, you know, where there's a total different look that, okay, you're number one overall pick. You've made 9 figures. You're a former MVP. You know, you got a Heisman, but you're a free agent now in 2021. Who the hell are you, even though I'm at your camp? And I know that kid kind of got corrected, not only by Cam, but by social media as well. But it's an interesting indication. Again, the Brady effect is going to change so much. We're already seeing it. I'm telling you, we're already seeing it.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles transform the way they work. After closing their New York City showroom, they started doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, people from all over the world can come into their showroom. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams. And it'll keep us talking a lot in the offseason with all the things that are going on during the season right. and leaking over into the offseason. Rich, I'm just noticing, man, let me get you out of here. I've been talking to you forever because I can't talk to you forever, Rich. But before you go, Rich, I love making sure people hear the journey. You know, you didn't just jump in that top broadcasting spot that you jumped in, Rich. I know you worked for the Staten Island newspaper as a writer. Just kind of take me through that journey. You started off as a writer.
As you mentioned, I went to Michigan. I did stand-up comedy there, and I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it, but I realized I wasn't
cut out for it. Actual stand-up comedy.
Yes, I did. For 3 years as a student comedian, once a month at the student union, I would do stand-up comedy, and I loved it. Made everything else that I've done broadcasting that much easier because nothing's more difficult than sussing out an audience live and getting the immediate feedback and trying to make them laugh. But I do love the immediate reaction. I miss it even in studio. I know it's not the crew's job to laugh at my stuff, but if I don't get the immediate feedback, I feel like something's falling flat. But that's what I wanted to do. I've always wanted to do either sports broadcasting or comedy, and I kind of had the opportunity to mix them both at SportsCenter. And I went to back home after graduating at my hometown newspaper because I wrote for the Michigan Daily in college. Right. And I covered Bo Schembechler's final season there. So I went home and I worked for my local newspaper where I was a summer intern during college. Did it for a couple of years. And I always said, you know what, I want to try sports broadcasting. How am I going to do it? And I went back to school at Northwestern, went through the graduate program there. Got a job at the local ABC affiliate in Redding, California, the ABC station. I did local sports there. I loved it. I was like, if you ever saw that TV show Northern Exposure, where it was a Jewish guy in Alaska, I was the Jewish guy in the mountain community of Northern California. That was pretty much, I lived the sports version of Northern Exposure. And I sent a tape to a headhunter, first class postage. That's all it cost. I'm in the category. What the hell? What's the big deal? I'll just send it and see what happens. And ESPN saw that tape, called me at my desk in this television station in Reading, invited me to try out. And I did. And I got the job. Like, I was struck by lightning. I was a lottery winner, essentially. And I showed up at age 26 in 1996 on the set of SportsCenter. My first SportsCenter was with Larry Beal. I believe on March 17th, 1996, it was the Saturday of the second round of the NCAA tournament. And there were 32 games, you know, it was the round of 32, and there were a ton of games, and they were ending as I was walking downstairs. I remember it was a half an hour SportsCenter. I had 11 or 12 video, you know, highlights, and I'd only personally seen one of them. I would have to ad lib the rest of them and kind of lean on my, you know, live performing background.
Right.
And I remember walking down to the set, and I remember thinking I could do two things. I could pee down my leg or just suck it up and try it. And I'm glad I chose the latter and not the former, even though I think I did both. And it was amazing just being there when, you know, Robin Roberts and Bob Lee and Charlie Steiner did the 6 o'clock Sports Center, and Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann did the 11 o'clock, and Craig Kilborn was doing the late night Sports Center. And then a couple of years into it, every single time I would open up the document that would be our schedule, you know, they would just put a document on the computer, and you'd check every day to see if the next month's schedule would be out. And every single time I would open it up, and pretty much every time I would be teamed up with Stuart Scott, to the point where one day Stuart and I were doing like our 12th Sports Center out of the last 14 Sports Centers together. And we would look at each other. I remember one time we looked at each other as we're getting ready to walk downstairs, and we're like, are we a team? Like, is that what's happening? Because nobody ever pulled us in and say, the two of you guys are great. You're our team. That never happened. It just kept on happening where who am I doing the 2 a.m. with? Oh, well, it's Stuart. And he would do, well, who am I doing the 2 a.m.? Well, it's Rich. And one day we looked at each other. We're like, I think we're a team. And the rest was kind of SportsCenter history.
Yeah, you know? And it changed a lot of things. That team, the way you guys brought fun to all of it. Stu bringing in all the brotherology with all the sayings and you know, the booyahs and all of that, man. Rich, it was what everybody was watching. And SportsCenter back then was you tune in to SportsCenter if you want to know anything about sports.
Right. Now it all shows up here, you know. Right. And so you know, and that's kind of the way SportsCenter went towards the end. And instead of it being a show about what happened, you know, technology and things, turned it into a show about why something happened. And, you know, the anchor was more in the role of, you know, mediator between two analysts arguing over why something happened, which is kind of the birth of what you see, you know, of a lot of shows that are on sports TV right now. Some do it better than others. Like, I love Stephen A. And obviously the interruption team of Tony and Michael are the gold standard for that. But I kind of wasn't digging SportsCenter towards the end of it. And things kind of got to a point where I asked to do more than just SportsCenter, and management wasn't really keen on that idea. And that's when NFL Network walked in. And I've been doing that for 18 years now and love every second of it, and get to work with you and get to cover, be the fly on the wall for so many great things with the NFL. But, you know, just circling back for a quick second, you know, Stuart was not really told to do what he was doing. Right. And he also wasn't told, keep doing what you're doing. He did that by himself. Like, that was the guy that when the cameras went off, he's still the same guy, bouncing off the walls. Mm-hmm. and energetic and infectious, you know, and many times he would just come out and say just phrases that were totally lost on me. And it infuriated a lot of people sitting at home thinking that he was being exclusionary, but he was being inclusionary to an audience that had not been serviced, quite frankly. And he knew that. He knew that. And he was basically like, this is what I'm going to do. I know there's an audience out there, and it's not all people of color. It's also people who, you know, a total rainbow of colors, if you will. But he was talking to a predominantly African-American audience that that a lot of other people were not keen on. And he kept at it. And I'll never forget when it was really crystallized for me. I think I've told you this story, but I'll bring it to your audience if you already heard it. So I did a line from Seinfeld, because Seinfeld was a hugely popular show towards the end of its run when Stuart and I were really beginning to work together a lot. So I did, I close out a segment with a Seinfeld line. Everybody on the set laughs and whatever. I stuck the landing on the line. I forget which line it was. So we go to break. Pause, commercial, silence. He goes to me, what was that you just said? And I told him what it was. He goes, where's that from? I'm like, Seinfeld. He goes, brothers don't watch Seinfeld. And that brought home to me is that, you know, to an audience that he's talking to, I might be viewed as exclusionary. Mm. You know? And the audience that I'm talking to views him as exclusionary. Well, he's sitting there saying, to hell with that. Yeah. To hell with that. Because brothers don't watch Seinfeld. So who are you talking to? Like, that's not what he said, but that's kind of the inference I might have taken.
Right.
Because he was fighting that battle every show, every highlight, every segment, every time the lights turned on. And I had a front row seat to that. And it was amazing, man.
It was amazing, but also
infuriating. I mean, Susie reminds me all the time because she had a front row seat to me too, where I had a great line. And Stuart would jump in on my highlights because he was so excited about it. And then, of course, you know, anytime you see when I appeared in The Last Dance, I was stunned because the number of times that I got to do a Jordan highlight or a Jordan story with Stuart sitting next to me was essentially that, because he. That was his guy. It was his story. That was his. I knew coming to work. Well, Jordan just dropped 55. I know who's doing the highlight. You know, like, not me, you know, but it was really like an experience unlike any other. And I guess to bring it all full circle, you were there on the set the day I found out he passed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, was not doing Total Access anymore. And my current show had yet to be born. I was still doing my podcast. So the odds that I would be on the air doing a live broadcast were pretty minimal. The fact that I had an opportunity to speak from the heart the moment he passed was really a gift that I cherish, because people should know about him and the way I felt about him and the way everybody I try to give voice to felt about who came across him. And, you know, you were there and that commercial break hit and, you know, I needed a moment. We kind of all hugged it out. And on that Sunday, that was something.
And Rich, I remember always saying, you know, cause we've been on the set with a few things have happened. And certainly that was monumental from the standpoint of what Stu was, to us, as you talk about African Americans and bringing that to the set. And I thought it was fascinating, you know, even back then, that it was you too, that you two, and I mean, everybody was tuning in for that. It was, I thought, an education
of us commingling as a people. Mm. You know, you bring up the Seinfeld. And it's so funny, I wasn't watching Seinfeld then. But ultimately, I started watching Seinfeld. It became one. It's one of the funniest shows in the world. I used to say, "Man, we're gonna watch something like Good Times." But Seinfeld was really, really. It was a great show for me. I still watch the reruns of it now. So seeing those commingle at the time, Rich, that blows my mind. Let me tell you what I think before I let you go, Rich. I get to talk to God sometimes at night by myself, and I said, "Man, wow, what a journey I've had growing up, 15 to 17." And then I met some great Hall of Famers that I played with and played against. I get to see them. But I also look at my second career and look at the people. You just mentioned some of them. You know, I was over there with Bob Lee. We got Bob Lee. You were Robin Roberts.
Berman.
These are icons in the business. Chris Berman, you know, Stu Scott, you know, Tom Jackson. Incredible guys that have taught me this business. Of course, you. I mean, just when I think about that, man, that's incredible. That's incredible. In the football world, got great friendships and got a chance to work with some of the very best to ever do it. And now in this world, great friendships and getting a chance to work with some of the very best to ever do it. It's truly been, outside of all the times I got caught in a hotel room and messed around all that junk, a charmed life. I'm just saying.
You know what? I feel the same way about you, too. And I will leave you with this, Irv, okay? Because you'll love this. I haven't shown this to anybody, but I show it. Because it kind of brings everything full together here. Sam sent me this photograph during my show, okay? This is a guy on a plane. You could see it's a...
Right, right.
A guy on... Okay, I don't know if you could see it with my... there you go. See, he's got a friend shirt on, right?
Right.
He just texts me that photograph. And I text him back, "Who is that?" And he wrote back, "Black guy that likes Friends. I found him."
It's so funny. Sap is crazy, man. Sap the best. So,
that's because, you know, Friends was on right before great Seinfeld or after Seinfeld. Right. So right. Brothers Don't Watch Friends. Also, just Sap, because I think I told that story about Stewart to Sap years ago. And he sends me, this is literally just 2 weeks ago, Sap sends me this photograph just out of the blue. I'm like, "What's that?" He's the one and only, too, man. They broke the mold with him. And we've worked with him and Marshall and Mooch and what have you. And, oh, my God.
That was so funny when you mentioned Marshall. When you said how Marshall calmed you down, you know, made me think about Rick. Marshall calmed everybody down. Like, Marshall. And he's the only person you can go to calm Warren Sapp down.
That's right.
You talk to Sapp for us. He's kind of I heard that story the other day. Oh, that was great on your podcast about John Lynch. And,
yeah, how about
and,
that?
Oh, and, my God.
How about that story?
That was great.
Where Lynch says that Derek Brooks.
Yeah, just share that right quick. Share that with the people.
I got Sapp, Lynch, and Derek Brooks together in a Zoom after Lynch got in the hall and after the Bucks won it all.
Oh, my God.
And Lynch tells a story that you know, Warren was a great player and a great practice player and a great teammate early on, was a little out of control. And to the point where either he, Lynch, or Brooks could calm him down, they both had no effect and finally brought it up to Dungy to do something about it. And Lynch basically said, "I think you got to sit him down," said to Dungy. And Dungy, according to Lynch, said that, okay,
Lynch, I think, and Brooks, you guys, in the room, right?
Lynch and Brooks in the room went to Dungy to say, "I think he got to bench Warren. We're out of options here of what we can do to get Warren back in the fold here." And Dungy, according to Lynch, said, "I think both of you are great. I think you're Hall of Fame players, but Lynch, I could play without you. And Derek, I think, you know, it'll be tough, but I can play without you, but we're not playing without 99. I cannot play without him. So you figure it out." And he sent them back out to deal with it. Like Dungy punted, basically telling them, "Yeah, I know you think you guys are all that. And I agree, you are talented, but I could play without you. Not Warren." And Warren had never heard the story.
Never heard it. Oh, my God.
And he had never heard the story.
So they were afraid to go back and tell Warren, hey, Warren, we took you up to the front office, but you won, so we're not even going to tell you that.
Warren, they said the next day just showed up and he got out of whatever funk he was in, right. And that was the end of that.
That's insane, man. Yeah. That is insane.
I love that. And Warren basically said, hey, Rich, you worked with me for 7 years. You know Warren's just like a cold. Sometimes he's got to run his course, but we'll be just
run
fine.
His course.
I'll always come back. I'll always come back.
Rich, that is what I'm talking about. The articulation of the human journey, Rich. That's exactly what you do, man. I so appreciate you taking the time, buddy. Please. And I'm so sorry I took up all this time, man. I didn't mean to talk to you.
No worries. I love chatting. Anything for you.
I appreciate it, Rich. And to Rich, to this, it means the world to me, man, to have those opportunities, to have spoken at the baby naming and to get a part of that culture, to see what's going on in your community and to see how you hold it together in your community, because we're trying to figure that out in our community. We're trying to figure it out. I give the numbers, 30% Caucasian Americans, 51% Hispanic, but we're 73% African Americans on the fatherlessness. So listen, keep doing what you're doing, buddy. And I appreciate you bringing in the diversity and crossing over and gleaning knowledge and understanding from all things to help make all things better, buddy. That's what we are talking about in this world. Hopefully we get there in this world, Rich. I love you, buddy. Thanks for
right,
taking
I love you too. Right back at you. And again, your speech was about being a good father and being there for families and how important that was. And but I'll never forget the way it started. It sounded like it was a stock line for you.
Yeah, I did.
That you say that you when you speak in it.
They've been calling me Irving.
To a bunch of Jewish people that they normally think that frequently think that you're Jewish too because they think your last name is Irving. And that was an outstanding icebreaker, Michael. That was fantastic. Everybody in my family and friends who are in that room still talk about it to this day. To this day.
You, buddy. Thanks.
Right
man.
Back at you.
I appreciate you, buddy.
You got it.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles reinvent the way they work. When the pandemic hit, the bike shop had to close their New York City showroom. They found a way to reopen by doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, the team can meet with two or three times the number of customers than they could before. And people from all over the world can visit their showroom, learn more about their story and others at Microsoft.com/Teams.